Thank you, Brother Dave, and good evening, brothers and sisters. It really is a pleasure, and I mean a real pleasure, to get to know God's characters, the ones that God gives to us for a very special reason. And we know that what God gives us in the Bible is for our learning. They're not just stories, nor are they just histories. Everything in here, in this book, is there for a very special reason that we can be instructed and that we can learn and that we can come closer to God. And that is the effect that we have, that takes place when we study a Bible character. And I think one of the interesting things about studying a Bible character is the friendship we form with someone that we have never seen. We don't really know what that individual looks like. We don't know the tone of his voice or her voice. But somehow we become closer and more closely attached as we study and as we read and as we meditate. We think about the individuals. And so it is with Samuel. I'm feeling very close to Samuel after having given weeks of on and off thought and meditation on the man. The man who is presented to us as a little boy. A little boy in a linen ephod. And how God used this individual. In our previous class, the first class on the study of Samuel, we looked at some of the background to the book and to the man himself. And I think we looked at the, it's been a little while, so I don't remember all the details, but I think we looked at the condition of the nation of Israel at the time when Samuel came on the scene. Israel had gone through 400 years of the judges. And you know well, I think, the history of the judges, that it was a cyclical thing during that time. The people sinned. God brought judgment. The people cried unto the Lord. The Lord sent them a deliverer and delivered them from their enemies. And this went all the way through the book of the Judges for a period of 400 years. And when we come to the end of the book of Judges, we read the commentary that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Not in God's eyes, but in his own eyes. But God never gave up on his people. And this is the interesting thing that we see develop here with the introduction of Samuel and his presentation to the nation of Israel. Now, you're all familiar with the fact that it was during the time of Samuel, during Samuel's lifetime, that the people came to Samuel and they said, give us a king. They wanted a king to be like the other nations. They weren't leaving it up to God. Now, they'd never had a king that had judges. But they had never had an earthly king. But I think we can see, on the one hand, we can see why they asked for a king. And on the other hand, we can see why God was angry with them. Because not having a king, and now they had their first major prophet after Moses. But the prophet's sons were not like Samuel. And this caused a great deal of distress in the nation because they could see that they were surely headed into trouble because there was no one there to lead the nation. Who would lead them? Because by this time they had been under the leadership and the guidance of Samuel, who gave them wise guidance and he gave them wise instruction. And the people were content with that. But as he got older, they could see that the end of the road was coming. But his sons were nothing like him. And what would the nation do? And so that's when they came and asked for a king. Samuel was a man of presence. We just pick it up from the text as we go through that everywhere that Samuel went, he had tremendous respect. The people, they didn't disrespect him. In fact, it seemed that Samuel was respected wherever he went. There was never any argument with Samuel. And when we think about that verse that tells us that these things are written for our learning, what is it that we learn from this one simple thing about Samuel? That he was a man who had a presence. Do we have a presence? Well, I'm not a prophet, I'm certainly not a judge, and I'm not a priest. Well, not in the sense of a priest like Samuel was of the tribe of Levi. But nevertheless, brothers and sisters, I think there is in the character of Samuel something to which every one of us can aspire. And this is what we will do, God willing, this evening in our study, is look a little further and a little deeper into the character of Samuel to see what really should rub off onto us. Because it's very true that the persons that we associate with will have an effect on us. And it's particularly true for young people. If young people mix with a certain element, well, that the example and the conduct of those people will have an effect. And it's the same, no matter what our age, that the persons that we associate with will have an effect upon us. And so if we want to avoid the bad effects of people that we have to associate with in the everyday world, then we need to form very firm and fast friendships with the people that God has given to us. The people that he wants us to draw near to and to learn from. And these people, and I am going to suggest that the two people that we will deal with specifically tonight are two excellent examples of very good friends who will do us an exceeding amount of good in our lives today. So let's begin in chapter 2 of 1 Samuel. And here in verse 1, I believe that we have a miracle. Because we have this woman, Hannah, who has come out of this period, this 400-year period of the judges. And here is a woman of high spiritual integrity. This woman was, to use an understatement, I guess, this woman was simply amazing. Then look at what comes out of this woman's mouth. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoiceth in the Lord, mine horn is exalted in the Lord, my mouth is enlarged over mine enemies, because I rejoice in thy salvation." So, where was Hannah's thinking? What was her joy? What was her delight? Well, it's very easy to see, isn't it, in the words of this prayer, which I think in actual fact was a song. And it comes as a result of what's already happened here in chapter 1. We'll just briefly summarize chapter 1 by saying that Hannah was one of two wives of the man Elkanah. Elkanah was a good and godly man. It becomes very obvious in the few comments that are made about Elkanah that he was a good man. But Elkanah had an outstanding wife in Hannah. By contrast, he had a mean and nasty wife in Peninnah. She was, as we would say, a piece of work. And she constantly tormented Hannah because Hannah could not have a child. And she could. And so Hannah, in her great distress, brought her grief and anguish and pain and suffering. She brought it right into the temple of the Lord. And there she prayed for a son. If we can just sort of fast forward at this point, we see what's beginning to unfold here with Hannah dedicating Samuel, consecrating him to the Lord, giving him up, making a total sacrifice, and what resulted from that sacrifice? An amazing individual, a judge, one who was spiritual and led the people and taught the people and introduced the schools of the prophets and raised up young men to be servants of the Lord also. But what of Samuel's sons? And here we have a tragedy. You see, we will come to Eli's sons very shortly, because they occur in this chapter. But it's also true that Samuel's sons were not spiritual men. They didn't even know the Lord. And we think, well, how could this be with such an individual as Samuel? The great Samuel. The problem with Samuel was that he didn't have a very good wife. And what do we know about Samuel's wife? We know absolutely nothing. We don't even know her name. We know the names of his sons. If we go to the book of Chronicles, we can find there the record of his sons. But we find no mention of his wife. And why is that? I'm going to suggest that it's because she wasn't worth mentioning. Because she did absolutely nothing for the offspring of Samuel, who was ministering to the Lord. And by contrast, we have here the woman Hannah. And what an amazing woman she is. Now, Elkanah, as we said before, was a good and a godly man. It would seem in the record that he stood in the shadow of Hannah, his wife, because she was such a great mind, and she had such a great expectation that her heart was always considering and focusing on God's salvation. In other words, God's plan, what God was doing. And so, when she comes to sing this song of exaltation, we can see the mind of this woman and how it worked. But there's a lesson to be learned from Hannah, and I'd like to just mention this, talk a little bit about this before we get into the song in detail. Perhaps the greatest lesson that we can learn from Hannah is the lesson of sacrifice. And this, I think, is probably one of the most difficult challenges that our women have. Now, just remember that these things are all there for our learning and for our instruction. And certainly Hannah is an example for every sister and every mother to look at and consider. Now, what woman would give up her child as a sacrifice to the Lord? Give him completely over. Well, this is what Hannah did. But when it comes to the service of God, I think we're all familiar with it, with the fact that this is largely the role of the men. The active ministry I'm talking about, and I think we all understand what we're saying here. And so the role of the sisters, the role of the wives, and also the roles of the mothers, is that they should be supportive of this. This was never any problem for Hannah. She understood that her man-child would be a servant of the Lord. And so she would hand him over to Eli, the high priest. Now, she was a very brave and courageous woman. No, she was a very faithful woman to do that. Because she was already aware of what was going on in the temple courts. She was not unaware of what the sons of Eli were up to. But somehow her faith superseded it all, and she could hand her boy, her child, over to Eli. But how many wives like to share their men? And this is a difficulty. For many, I know that many sisters find it hard if their husbands are active in ministry, active in service, to give them up and to let them dedicate the amount of time that is often necessary in the service of our God. And if ever we need an example of giving up our men, then I think it's right here in the pages of 1 Samuel. But there is another very important element to all of this, and that is the appreciation of time. Now, when Hannah made this vow that she would give up her child to the service of the Lord, she knew that she would have a very short period of time with Samuel. Because she held that boy at home only until he was weaned. And as soon as she stopped breastfeeding that child, she handed him over. Now, even if it went for 5 years, and probably didn't go that long, but maybe for three, but even let's assume that even if she had him for 5 years, can you imagine the effect of what the effect that she had to have, and Elkanah too, what they had to accomplish in that very short period of time for that child? Because that child was going into a corrupt priesthood. He would serve in a temple where the priests were vile, selfish, and not only that, they were not lovers of God. And this is the arena that this boy would minister in. And so the contrast between what was going on out there at Ramah, where Elkanah and Hannah lived, and over here in Shiloh, just a mere, I think, somewhere between 15 and 20 miles away, there had to be a huge contrast. And the home there in Elkanah, the home there in Ramah, was a home which was a godly home. Godly principles. And there was a woman and a man who had to have such an effect upon this boy that when he went into that temple, he already knew what was good and he also knew what was holy. He'd experienced it as a very young child. Well, I'm going to have to move on and get to chapter 2, verse 1. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoiceth in the Lord." And so Hannah says, "I rejoice." And this tells us quite a bit about this woman. It tells us that this woman sung. I believe that this was a woman who sung continually the spiritual songs. Her house was filled with spiritual songs. Now, the spiritual songs didn't have to wait until David. They were already there in Israel. And so she rejoices, it says, in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies because I rejoice in thy salvation. What salvation? As we've already said, Israel was a mess. Israel was in a shocking condition. But here in this home, at least, this couple were not losing their focus. And this woman constantly rejoiced. And she couldn't rejoice and not let it show. It had to be demonstrated. And I'm sure it was. One of the houses where I've stayed on quite a few occasions when I've been in Costa Rica, it's a real delight because the sister there, Sister Gladys, she's up at 6:30 in the morning and she prepares food. She loves to be in the kitchen and she loves to prepare food. And it's good to visit that house, I can tell you. But while she's preparing food, she's singing hymns. And I was amazed because she doesn't just sing one or two. She goes on for hours. All through the morning as she's in that kitchen, she's singing the songs of Zion. She's singing the hymns. And this is because she is a sister who is rejoicing in the hope that we share. And it's a wonderful thing. And this was Hannah. We can't lose focus, brothers and sisters, and that's one lesson that we learn right here. What can separate us from the love of Christ? And certainly with Hannah, nothing could separate her from her faith or her God. There is none holy as the Lord. And this is the memorial name of God. There is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. That's what she understood. There is none holy. So this tells us what this home was like. And this tells us what really fueled Samuel as a little boy when he went up to that temple. He came out of a holy place. And you see, that's what all of our homes should be, really. Holy places. And that was reflected in everything that was said and done, and the way it was done. And it was a love story between Elkanah and Hannah. We know it was. We can see it. It's woven right into the text. And it was a beautiful love story because it was all about holiness. Because in their home, God was front and center in everything. And so it was so incongruous that we had this woman, Peninnah, who would despise and make fun of Hannah. And that was the incongruous part. And so you can see that when God blessed Hannah and he gave her this child, how she could say, "Mine horn is exalted in the Lord, my mouth is enlarged over mine enemies." Faith wins. That's what she's saying. If you have faith, you will be victorious. Doesn't mean we'll never have trial, but it does mean that we will not become bitter, and we don't have to go the way of the world and do the things that other people do. I'm just going to go to Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 21. And it talks about, in this part of Ephesians, it talks about us as being no more strangers and foreigners or sojourners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, being built upon the foundation, this is verse 20, of the apostles and prophets. Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation of God in the Spirit. And that's the true building of God. It's the spiritual building that's built block by block by one brother, one sister, one block at a time, by all of us being holy. We become a holy house. Verse 3 and 1 Samuel 2, talk no more so exceeding proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. And you can see after the years of arrogancy that she had suffered, how she could say this: let not arrogancy come out of your mouth. How easy it would have been for Hannah to have fought back. But she understood there was a better way. And so we are instructed in the same way. And we find it mentioned in this instruction in the book of Proverbs. An interesting reference in Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. And that's it. We hate evil, pride and arrogancy and the evil way. And the froward mouth. The froward mouth is a mouth that is boastful. And is a mouth that is rude, inconsiderate. All of these things that are so easy to take on board. Because it's so easy. It's just all around us. But the mouth of the saint is very different. And it must be very different, my brothers and sisters. And so it was with Hannah. In that one house, there were two women and they had two different mouths. And the mouth of Hannah was very controlled. For the Lord, she says, is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. Now, she was no slouch. She understood what God was all about. And I wonder if we do. Because I think we too often forget. But actions are weighed. Let's just take a look at it. Just a few references. Let's start with Psalm 62 in verse 2. Let's make that verse 12. Also unto thee, O Lord, belongeth mercy. For thou renderest to every man according to his work. And we could put right alongside of that verse, no exceptions. It's always been that way. And it's the same way now, it doesn't change. The Lord renders to every man and woman according to his or her work. How does it all work out? Well, it does, and we need, I think, just to be assured of that as a basis. But let's take a look at Matthew chapter 16, the same thing is basically said here as well in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 27. For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his deeds or according to his work. So there you go. We have it repeated out of the Psalm. Jesus makes the statement very clear. And so our actions are weighed. And Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. These things saith he that holdeth the seven stars in his right hand, who walketh in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. I know thy works, and thy labor, and thy patience, and how thou canst not bear them which are evil, and thou hast tried them which say they are apostles and are not, and hast found them false. So here Jesus is telling the brothers and sisters in Ephesus that he's walking in the midst. He's walking right in the midst of us, and he knows our works. And that's a very interesting thing. Because here in the book of Samuel, it was right in the forefront of Hannah's mind that God weighs our actions. And I guess God can be a little distant sometimes. We can put God off too. You know, especially if we're not baptized. We can say, well, I don't have to do anything because I'm not baptized yet. I can do whatever I want. When I'm baptized, well, I'll smarten up and do everything just right. Well, you know, it just doesn't really work that way. Because the die is cast from a very early age. And I think here we have the best example of any example in this example of Samuel, who as a boy, just right off the breast of his mother, now goes into active service, and he's into the ministry, and he's in the temple. And here, and we have to understand that there was a lot of opportunity for Samuel to go wrong. And we can be sure that when he was entrusted to Eli, that his parents said, you are to listen to Eli, but you are not to listen to his sons. Now, Eli was, I think we can understand that Eli was a faithful high priest. but he was a hopeless dad. And he made a real mess of bringing up his sons. And he paid a heavy price for that. And so the die is cast when we're very young. And so the instruction that Samuel got from his parents set him instead for the rest of his life. And you don't find in Samuel one who said, well, I'm so young, I've got to do a lot of things yet. Oh, when I've done all those things, well, then I'll come back and I'll work in the temple. He dedicated himself from the very moment he set his foot inside that place. Well, I see time's moving on, and I'm not, so I better move. Verse 9, he will keep the feet of his holy ones, or he will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength shall no man prevail. And so often we think that we're strong, and we're not. We cannot prevail in our own strength. But God, he will keep the feet. And by keeping the feet, that's talking about the direction of life. But the wicked ones, and Hannah, as she voiced this song, the contrast was evident before her. There was no difficulty in finding the way of the wicked, because they were right there in the temple. And there was also the opportunity to see the way of the saint, the holy ones. And this is the way that she, Hannah, and Elkanah instructed Samuel. It would appear that in the life of Samuel, that mum and dad only visited him once a year. Now, I find that a little difficult to believe, but the text only indicates that they went up once a year. Now, they were supposed to go up three times a year, but the record tells us that he went up once a year. But you can bet that if Elkanah and Hannah were there visiting Samuel once a year, how important that dialogue would be. That he will keep. Let's just focus a little bit on that one. He will keep. Psalm 37. It's excellent in this regard. Psalm 37, verse 23 and 24. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. Let me give you the Revised Version. A man's goings are established of the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. Now, what are we being told here? We're being told that if we commit ourselves to God, he will order our way. He will establish us. And yes, there will be difficulties and there will be trials and we will fall. But we're not destroyed, because we are upheld by the hand of the Almighty God. And this is such a basic, but such a fundamental and an important truth, brothers and sisters, that we must understand this. That we must commit ourselves to the Lord God Almighty. And then our lives will have purpose, we will have joy, and yes, we will fail. But we will not have what is called in Scripture leanness of soul. Because that's what happens, you know, when we forsake the truth, when we forsake the Lord, what enters into our lives is leanness of soul. We become spiritually bankrupt. And there is no joy. There is no rejoicing. There is no holiness. And life becomes a meaningless existence. Oh, we might think we're having fun. And a lot of people, they figure that, well, that there's no fun in the truth. There's no fun in being a Christadelphian. Why, it's all going to meetings and reading, and that's not fun. And the reason that a person can come to that conclusion is because they haven't gone there. And if we have committed ourselves, if we have had the experience of Hannah, if we do focus on the salvation of God and live in the presence of God, then we can experience some of this joy that she talks about. No, she just didn't talk about it. She exulted in it. You couldn't contain Hannah. She was just bursting at the seams with everything about God and what God could do. And so when she comes to the end of her song, she says, "They that strive with the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them shall he thunder in heaven. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." And if we should be permitted another study, God willing, we will see how this is all fulfilled. How Hannah, she had a wonderful vision, and she knew that Israel needed a deliverer. Because why? Because the Philistines were right at their back door. And in fact, the Lord would thunder upon the Philistines, and he would bring victory to Israel. But then the people would ask for a king, and they got their king, but that wasn't the king that they needed. They needed a different king. And this is the king that would come. And this is the king who would be a faithful priest, he's called in verse 35. And in fact, that word in Strong's Concordance can be a prince or an officer. And so one would be raised up who would be faithful, that would do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And so this is none other than King David, the one who with God would build a sure house and will one day walk before the anointed forever. The study of Samuel, brothers and sisters, is an absolute delight. It really does bring us closer to God. But when we look at Samuel, we see everything that was accomplished in this man's life. And he accomplished a huge amount. It's kind of strange how it all ended. The record just says, "And Samuel died." That's it. No fuss, no anything else. He just died. But when we see that Samuel was such a great prophet, such a great priest, and a great judge, all that he accomplished, it was all because of the faith of a mum and a dad who raised that child in absence. And yet they were with him. I believe there wasn't one day in the life of Samuel that mum and dad went on their knees in Ramah and in prayer. Not only for Samuel, but for God's people. And in that we have an example for every one of us. As parents, mums and dads. And also as brothers and sisters, part of God's people. is our concern for God's people and God's salvation. There's a lot we can learn from the example of Samuel and also from the example of Hannah and Elkanah.